Picture this. You are holding a glass of red wine.
Oh, no. I already know where this is going.
Right. You turn a little too quickly. Your elbow catches the edge of the coffee table and the glass tips. And it's like time actually slows down.
The slow motion plunge.
Exactly. You watch that dark crimson liquid just launch through the air, heading straight for your pristine, light-colored living room carpet.
It is a moment of pure, unfiltered domestic terror. I mean, we've all been there.
We really have.
Yeah.
And in that moment of terror, your fight or flight instinct kicks in. So you drop the glass, you grab like the nearest towel you can find, you throw yourself to your knees, and you just start scrubbing the carpet like your life depends on it.
Yeah, you're just fighting the stain with everything you have,
Exactly.
which unfortunately is the exact moment you completely seal your own fate because by scrubbing it, you have just turned a minor, totally fixable surface accident into a permanent fixture of your living room floor.
It is the ultimate paradox. The panic response, like the immediate brute force action we take to save the carpet, is precisely the mechanism that destroys it.
Totally destroys it.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are talking directly to you, the listener who has ever ruined a favorite shirt, a rug, or a hardwood floor because of a panicked, adrenaline-fueled cleanup attempt.
Which is basically everyone.
Exactly. So today we are pulling our insights from a highly comprehensive, super practical guide published by Mrs. Clean Mall.
Yeah, they're a residential cleaning service. They handle some of the toughest problem areas across Orillia, Barrie, and the Greater Toronto Area.
And this guide isn't just a basic list of tips. It is a masterclass in the chemistry and physics of common household disasters.
It acts as a phenomenal baseline. It maps out exactly how to approach stubborn stains on virtually any surface in your home, and it relies on professional techniques rather than, old wives' tales.
Our mission today is to shortcut your way to being a stain removal expert. We are going to decode the actual science of matching the right treatment to the right surface.
Because you really need to know the chemistry.
Right. We want to equip you with the knowledge so that the next time disaster strikes, you don't panic.
Yeah.
You will know exactly how to rescue your carpets, your hardwood, and your fabrics from permanent damage.
And honestly, the facts are surprising.
Yeah, here is the fact that jumped out at me right away. According to this professional guide, most stain removal failures are not because the stain is invincible.
Right.
They're purely user error.
It's wild. We often assume that a substance like red wine or ink is inherently permanent, but the chemistry tells a completely different story.
So the failure happens early on.
Almost always in those first few chaotic moments, people use the completely wrong chemical product. They flood the area with way too much liquid. They wait entirely too long. Or, as we just described, they commit the ultimate cardinal sin of stain removal.
Rubbing the stain.
Yes.
Which brings us to our first major concept. Before we can even look at the specific chemical magic potions that lift these stains out, we have to completely overhaul our physical approach.
Because when a spill happens, panic makes us do the exact opposite of what the material actually needs.
We need to establish the golden rules of the physical cleanup, the absolute most important being the blot not rub rule.
So crucial.
I was thinking about this physical action and like why it's so destructive. Vigorously scrubbing a fresh, wet stain on a carpet is essentially like aggressively rubbing two pieces of Velcro together.
Oh, that's a great way to picture it.
Right.
Yep.
You aren't actually wiping the liquid away into your towel. You are forcefully tangling the microscopic hooks of those synthetic carpet fibers around the liquid molecules. You're just grinding the pigment deeper into the twist of the yarn until they're locked together.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that is the exact physical mechanism at play. You are agitating the fibers, which causes them to open up and absorb the liquid even faster.
That's how it makes it worse.
Much worse. Plus, think about the geometry of a spill. When you drop a liquid onto a porous surface, it naturally wants to expand outward.
Right, it spreads.
Yeah. So if you take a cloth and start scrubbing from the center, you are physically driving that liquid into a wider radius. You're giving it momentum.
Giving the stain momentum. I love that. So the alternative is blotting. But the guide is very specific about how to blot.
You can't just mash it.
No, you don't just mash a towel straight down in the middle. You have to always blot from the outside edge of the stain, deliberately moving inward toward the center.
Exactly, because by doing that, you are creating a perimeter. You are utilizing capillary action.
Capillary action.
Yeah, that's the ability of a liquid to flow into narrow spaces, like the fibers of a dry paper towel, to pull the moisture straight up vertically. Blotting from the outside in traps the stain, preventing that horizontal spread.
Okay, so you're carefully blotting, establishing that perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
But while you are doing this, the clock is ticking.
Always ticking.
The second golden rule is that time is of the essence. The guide points out that most stains are 10 times easier to remove in the first 10 minutes than they are after they've sat for hours. Why 10 minutes, though? What is happening chemically in that window?
Well, in that initial window, the spill is still largely in a liquid state. It's resting on the surface or, you know, trapped in the macrospaces between the fibers.
So it's physically just sitting there.
Right. But as time passes, the liquid begins to evaporate, and the remaining pigments and compounds start to form actual chemical bonds with the dyes and fibers of the material itself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Once a stain transitions from a physical deposit to a chemical bond, you are no longer just wiping up a spill. You are trying to reverse a chemical reaction.
That makes that 10-minute window incredibly critical. It's the difference between picking up dirt off a floor and trying to unpaint a wall.
That's exactly it. Unpainting a wall.
But even in a rush, there are two more physical rules we have to touch on. The first is testing. You have to test your cleaning product in a hidden area first.
Always. Because every fabric dye is different and every wood finish is different, you want to make sure the chemical you're applying doesn't strip the color or, like, melt the sealant.
Right. Nobody wants to successfully remove a coffee stain, only to leave behind a perfectly bleached, glowing white circle in the middle of a dark gray sofa.
A total nightmare.
But let's say you test it, it works, you lift the stain, and it looks clean. The guide introduces a rinsing rule here that honestly completely upended how I think about cleaning.
The soap residue rule.
Yes. It says you must rinse the area thoroughly with plain water because leaving cleaning product residue behind actually attracts more dirt later on.
It does.
Hold on. If I leave soap in the carpet, shouldn't that just make the carpet extra clean? How does soap attract dirt?
It seems counterintuitive, right? Until you look at how soap molecules are built. A surfactant, which is basically the active ingredient in most soaps, is a molecule with two distinct ends.
Okay.
One end is hydrophilic, meaning it loves water.
Right.
The other end is hydrophobic, meaning it hates water but absolutely loves grabbing onto oils, grease, and dirt.
So it's like a microscopic magnet with two different poles.
Precisely. When you wash a stain, the hydrophobic tails grab the dirt and the hydrophilic heads attach to the water, allowing the whole mess to be wiped away.
Makes sense.
But if you don't rinse the area, you leave thousands of those soap molecules embedded in your carpet fibers. Their dirt-loving tails are just sitting there, exposed.
It's waiting.
Exactly. Over the next few weeks, as you walk across that spot with normal household dust on your socks, or as dust settles from the air, those soap molecules grab onto it.
Wow. So the spot gets dark and dingy again. You think the old stain is magically reappearing from beneath the floorboards?
But it's not the wine coming back.
It's brand new dirt sticking to the invisible soap trap you left behind.
Which is why a final, gentle blot with a clean, damp cloth is non-negotiable. You have to extract the soap.
But, and there's always a but, you cannot go overboard with the rinsing. Which brings us to the last physical rule. Do not overwet.
Super important.
If you flood your carpet or your upholstery with a bucket of water trying to get the soap out, you are inviting a whole new disaster. The guide notes that excessive water penetrates down into the backing of the carpet or deep into the foam of a sofa.
Because foam and carpet padding act like massive sponges. Once water gets down there, it receives almost no airflow.
So it just stays wet.
It can take days or weeks to dry, which is the perfect breeding ground for mold and mildew. Plus, the water can dissolve the glues holding the carpet backing together, causing it to delaminate and bubble.
Yikes. Okay, so our physical technique is locked in. We're acting within the first 10 minutes. There's our blotting from the outside in, never rubbing. We test our products, we rinse away the residue, and we keep things damp, never flooded.
We are ready.
Now we actually need the right tools. Because, as the Mrs. Clean Mole Guide lays out, the chemistry of the spill dictates the chemistry of the cure.
This is where we transition from technique to the actual arsenal. Applying the wrong chemical to a stain won't just fail to clean it.
It can set it.
It can trigger a reaction that permanently sets it into the material.
Let's start with the most common category.
Yeah.
Organic stains.
Hmm.
We are talking red wine, coffee, food spills, maybe a little bit of chocolate on the carpet or upholstery.
Like everyday stuff.
Right. You don't actually need to rush to the store for a $30 specialty cleaner. The professional secret for organics is incredibly simple. A 50-50 mix of regular dish soap and hydrogen peroxide. You apply it, let it sit for exactly 5 minutes, and then blot.
It's surprisingly effective.
Why does this specific combination work so well?
It's a two-pronged attack. As we discussed, the dish soap acts as a surfactant. It breaks the surface tension and lifts any fats or oils, like the oils in coffee beans or the fats in food.
Okay, that handles the fat.
Then you have the hydrogen peroxide. Peroxide is an oxidizing agent. Its job is to interact with the chromophores.
Chromophores?
Yeah, they're the specific parts of a molecule that absorb and reflect light to create color. The extra oxygen atom in hydrogen peroxide literally attacks and breaks the chemical bonds of those chromophores.
So it's not just lifting the red wine out. It is chemically altering the pigment so that it is no longer red. It renders the stain invisible.
Exactly. It breaks down the organic matter without being as harsh or destructive as, say, industrial bleach. Though, as we said, always test it first, because peroxide can have a mild bleaching effect on certain unstable fabric dyes.
It's amazing that a chemistry experiment sitting under my kitchen sink right now is the professional standard.
It really is.
But we've been talking about organic compounds absorbing into fibers. Let's pivot to a completely different type of hazard. Ink.
Oh, boy.
A pen leaks on your sofa. Your immediate reflex is to grab a wet rag and start dabbing.
That is a terrible reflex.
Really?
The guide stresses that introducing water to an ink stain is a guaranteed way to make it worse. Most modern inks are not water-soluble in a way that allows them to be wiped away cleanly.
So what does the water do?
Water simply acts as a carrier fluid. It just spreads the ink particles over a much wider area of the fabric.
So water is the enemy here. The guide says you need to use isopropyl alcohol on a cloth. Apply it and blot.
Isopropyl alcohol acts as a solvent. It breaks down the oils and polymers in the ink that hold the pigment to the fabric, dissolving it so it can be transferred from the sofa directly onto your cloth.
So it's a completely different chemical approach than oxidizing a wine stain.
Completely different.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's look at a substance that defies all of these liquid rules. Candle wax. You knock a candle over onto a rug. The treatment for wax on carpet or fabric is essentially localized temperature warfare.
I love the physics behind this one.
The guide says you never, ever rub it or try to wipe it while it's warm. Instead, you go the opposite direction. You take a bag of ice and freeze the wax first.
Make it as cold as possible.
Right. That makes the wax brittle. Then you physically crack it and pick off the large chunks. But there's always that waxy, greasy residue embedded in the fibers. To get that out, you take a brown paper bag, lay it flat over the residue, and you take a hot iron and press it over the paper. The iron heats the wax back up into a liquid, and the paper bag absorbs it right out of the carpet.
You are manipulating the phase states of the material?
It's so clever.
You use extreme cold to force thermal contraction, turning the lipid structure of the wax brittle so you can break the mechanical bond it has with the carpet. Then you use extreme heat to force a phase change back to a liquid.
And the paper bag just drinks it up.
Exactly. Because the paper bag is highly porous, capillary action dries the liquid wax up away from the synthetic carpet fibers into the paper.
It is brilliant. You are using physics to do the heavy lifting. But let's look at biological hazards, because applying heat to those is a nightmare.
A literal nightmare.
Let's talk about the one no homeowner wants to deal with: pet urine on a carpet.
A completely different chemical challenge, and one that requires a highly specific solution.
The guide is completely rigid on this. For pet urine, you must use an enzymatic cleaner. They specifically name Nature's Miracle as an example.
Yes.
You apply it, and then you do something strange. You cover the wet spot with plastic wrap and just let it sit. I have to admit, enzymatic cleaner sounds like marketing jargon.
Yeah.
What are enzymes actually doing?
They aren't just soap. They are biological catalysts. Think of enzymes as microscopic Pac-Men.
Pac-Men?
Yeah. What? Pet urine contains uric acid crystals, which are notoriously difficult to dissolve with standard water and soap. Traditional cleaners might wash away the liquid component, but those uric acid crystals get left behind in the fibers.
And then what happens?
Anytime it gets humid, they reactivate and release that terrible smell.
Ah, so that's why you think you've cleaned it, but the smell comes back 3 months later on a rainy day.
Exactly. Enzymatic cleaners contain live bacteria and enzymes that literally digest the uric acid crystals. They consume the biological waste until there is nothing left.
And the plastic wrap.
The reason the guide tells you to cover it with plastic wrap is to create a microclimate. It prevents the cleaner from evaporating, keeping the area moist so the enzymes stay alive and have enough time to finish their meal.
That makes total sense now. You are deploying a microscopic cleanup crew. Now, we focus heavily on soft, porous surfaces like carpets and fabrics. Let's contrast that with hard surfaces, which have their own unique vulnerabilities.
Hard surfaces might seem invincible, but they are incredibly reactive to the wrong treatments.
Take hardwood floors, for example. The guide states that for a fresh coffee spill on hardwood, a damp microfiber cloth used immediately is your best strategy. But you have to dry it instantly.
You can't let it sit.
Standing water will seep into the micro cracks between the boards, causing the wood to swell and warp.
Water is the primary enemy of wood. And then you have tile grout. Grout is fascinating because it's a highly porous material sitting right next to a non-porous tile. It traps everything.
For grease on tile grout in a kitchen, you don't use harsh chemicals. The guide recommends a baking soda paste applied with a grout brush or a citrus degreaser.
Which is very gentle.
The baking soda provides a gentle, non-scratching, abrasive action while neutralizing the fatty acids in the grease.
And if you are dealing with rust, which is a huge problem in bathrooms or basements, the guide is very clear. Standard cleaners won't touch rust.
Right. For rust on tile, the guide says you need a targeted product like CLR or Barkeeper's Friend.
Right.
You apply it. Let it dwell so the chemical reaction can occur and then scrub.
You have to give it time.
I found it really interesting that the guide highlights Barkeeper's Friend as a major essential specifically for Canadian households. It notes that it's widely available at Canadian Tire locations across the GTA, and it's considered a staple in Ontario commercial cleaning for tackling rust, hard water mineral deposits, and even burnt on food.
Barkeeper's Friend contains oxalic acid, which is phenomenally effective at breaking down the iron oxide in rust at a molecular level. It's a great example of having the right chemical key for a specific chemical lock.
So we've successfully navigated the immediate crises. We know what to do in that 10-minute golden window. But life isn't always that neat.
No, it is not.
We don't always catch the spill as it happens. Sometimes you move a piece of furniture and discover a mystery stain that has clearly been there for weeks.
The dreaded set stain. When a stain has had days or weeks to cure, the chemical bonds have fully solidified. To remove it, you essentially have to perform chemical time travel.
Chemical time travel?
Yeah, you have to bring the stain back to an active state.
How do you wake up a dormant stain without destroying the fabric in the process?
The guide explains that for a set carpet stain, you start by applying a very small amount of cold water directly to the spot. You aren't trying to wash it.
You're just rehydrating it.
Exactly. You are just trying to rehydrate the hardened compounds, softening them up before you apply your actual chemical treatment. If you are dealing with a piece of clothing or removable fabric, soaking it in an enzyme pre-soak for 30 to 60 minutes before washing can work miracles on old organic stains.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because something happens when people discover these old set stains. They panic. They realize their normal cleaners aren't working, and they turn to the internet for miracle cures.
Oh, the internet hacks.
And the Mrs. Clean Mall Guide takes the time to thoroughly debunk a couple of the biggest viral cleaning myths out there. Let's start with the big one, bleach.
Bleach is widely misunderstood. People view it as a universal stain remover, but it's not.
The guide points out that yes, bleach is a powerful disinfectant and it whitens things. But it doesn't necessarily remove the physical soil of a stain.
Yeah.
It just permanently breaks the color bond so you can't see it anymore.
And the collateral damage is massive. If you put bleach on a colored fabric, it permanently strips the dye. But even on hard surfaces, it's dangerous.
Dangerous how?
People love putting bleach on tile grout to make it white. Over time, the harshness of the bleach actually degrades the structural integrity of the grout, causing it to become brittle, discolor, and eventually crumble.
The guide warns, you should only use bleach on white, non-porous surfaces, and only when you fully understand the risks. But that brings me to the myth I really want to push back on, the vinegar myth.
Here we go.
If you open TikTok, Instagram, or any DIY blog right now, they will tell you to pour white vinegar on literally every surface of your house.
Literally everything.
Got a stain? Vinegar, you know, up your floors. Vinegar, cleaning your shower. Vinegar. Why is this professional guy telling us to step away from the vinegar bottle?
This is a perfect example of why we have to respect chemistry over viral trends. Vinegar is acetic acid.
Yeah.
It is acidic.
Right.
If you pour an acid onto natural stone, like marble or travertine, or onto the protective sealant of your tile grout, it undergoes a chemical reaction that literally eats away at the calcium carbonate in the stone.
So you aren't just cleaning it. You are slowly dissolving your own floor.
Exactly. It dulls hardwood finishes over time and strips protective layers. The guide states clearly that while vinegar is fine for some basic odor control or descaling your coffee maker, it is simply not an effective, safe stain remover for most household surfaces.
It is wild how an internet hack can convince millions of people to slowly erode the expensive protective seals on their home surfaces. It really highlights the difference between a neat trick on social media and actual professional chemistry.
You have to ask yourself, what is the actual chemical interaction happening here? Am I safely lifting a pigment, or am I just making my living room smell like a salad dressing while ruining my sealant?
That is the ultimate takeaway. We have to respect the chemistry. Which brings us to the end of our deep dive today. Let's do a quick recap so you, the listener, can build a professional-grade household emergency kit.
Based on everything we've pulled from the Mrs. Cleanwell guide, your essential toolkit should include plain blue dish soap, 3% hydrogen peroxide, isopropyl alcohol for inks, an enzymatic cleaner for biologicals, baking soda for gentle abrasion, and Barkeeper's Friend for rust and minerals.
If you have those specific items under your sink, you are armed for almost any scenario. And remember your physical golden rules. Act within the 10-minute window, never rub, always blot from the outside, in-rinse your residues, and match the specific chemistry to the surface you are treating.
No more stomping out fires with muddy boots.
So what does this all mean? Why should you care about the molecular structure of soap or how oxalic acid interacts with rust? Because the stakes in your home are surprisingly high.
They really are.
Think about the reality of a panic mistake. Replacing a section of living room carpet, hiring a contractor to chip out and regrout your bathroom tile, or having to completely sand down and resurface a warped hardwood floor. These are incredibly expensive, deeply stressful ordeals.
They are massive financial burdens that often stem from a single 30-second miscalculation with a wet rag.
Mastering this knowledge gives you agency. It transforms a moment of domestic terror into a totally manageable 5-minute chore. It saves you serious money, and it saves you immense heartache when life inevitably spills over.
And before we close out, there is one final thought embedded in the guide's warnings that I really want you to mull over. We touched on the idea of temperature warfare earlier, using heat to lift wax.
Right.
But the guide issues a severe warning against using heat on protein stains, things like blood, dairy, or pet urine. If you apply high heat to a protein stain, you cause the proteins to denature.
Denaturing. Wait, that's like what happens when you cook a raw egg, right?
Yeah.
It goes from a clear, runny liquid to a solid white mass, and you can never, ever uncook it.
That is exactly right. You permanently alter the structure of the molecules, welding them into the fibers of the carpet. And yet, if you look at the consumer market today, we are constantly being sold increasingly powerful, high-heat cleaning gadgets.
Oh, like steam mops and heated carpet extractors?
To high-end vacuums that generate massive heat from their motors.
Oh, wow. I see where you're going with this.
It raises a deeply ironic question about how we maintain our modern homes. We buy these expensive high-tech machines believing they are the ultimate solution to a messy life. But if you run a steam cleaning vacuum over a pet accident, you haven't properly pre-treated with enzymes, you aren't cleaning it.
You are literally cooking the stain into the floor.
Are we actually engineering a future where, in our desperate attempt to sanitize our homes with extreme heat, we end up permanently welding the everyday messes into the synthetic fibers of our lives?
That is a genuinely chilling thought.
Yeah.
We are bringing in the heavy artillery, assuming brute force and extreme temperatures will save us, when they are the very things making the damage irreversible.
Exactly.
It all circles completely back to where we started today. That slow motion moment when the wine glass tips. Your instinct will always be to reach for the biggest, hottest, most forceful tool you have and aggressively attack the problem.
But as we've learned from the chemistry, the real power isn't in the brute force.
No. The real power is in patience, precision, and knowing exactly when to step back, let the enzymes do the work, and just gently blot. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.